Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. Happy out belated birthday to you, Oliver.
Oh, I did have one of those this week.
You did have one of those, so happy belated birthday.
What a wonderful day that was.
Welcome back on the gravel, everyone.
It's good to see y'all.
No race this weekend. That's okay. We got plenty still to talk about. We got
Nico Hulkenberg came in clutch this week.
Absolutely. We also have some WEC stuff that we missed out last week, so we'll go over that. But let's just dive right into it, shall we?
Absolutely. You take it away, my man.
I got you. First piece of news is some renderings and drawings of the 2026 cars and the specs that those include, mainly focusing on the active aero on the front wing. similar to how the tail fin opens up during DRS, the front wing will be doing the exact same thing.
Yeah, that came out this week. It kind of shocked me. I saw the renders and sketches, and I know we talked last week about how that was being very unstable with the 50-50 split between the IC and the battery. But it was literally, like when you looked at the sketches, it was kind of like a DRS flap on the front wing as well. And like they came to realize that that might not be a possibility because it's creating too much potential instability in the car, but it looked really cool.
It's
like
Active Aero is a
really cool concept.
I love Active Aero is used before in
a
lot of like Hoonigan cars and like a lot of rally cars. Yeah. But never in F1 to my knowledge, right?
No.
Yeah. So that would have been a first, but this is what the, like you said, this is what could be causing the cars to really just be unstable. And that's just kind of making it unsafe to drive. And obviously we can't have that. So
yeah, it reminds me of the like mid 2000s F1 cars. If you look at like 2007, 2008, like Kimi and Lewis's championship winning cars, how advanced and how much like aero components were specifically on the front wing. That's what those renders and sketches were really reminding me of. But I know those cars obviously didn't have an active DRS flap on the wing. I mean, DRS didn't even get introduced until the very early 2010s. Wood Williams kind of just designed it out of nowhere, and then it got adapted by all the other teams. And that obviously it's now a mainstay in the sport. But yeah, I hope they'll find a way around it. And obviously they're working towards that right now. They obviously said, from all of our simulator findings, XYZ, we obviously need to put a lot more time into designing and working this out. So I expect there's still the possibility to have these advanced front wings, but it's gonna take a lot of work to get there. But in time, we'll make it.
In due time, we will see it, which is A-OK. Max's response. Max was named Time's top 100 most influential people of the year, which there's only been three drivers. I think I mentioned this last week, but I believe it's Michael Schumacher and Lewis Hamilton are the other two. But that's kind of old news. But the response Max said to the media was very, very entertaining. And essentially it was along the lines of, it doesn't really help me out, so I don't care. What can I do? Like, how does this help me?
Not even one of the most Dutch things ever, but one of the most Kimi Räikkönen things I have ever heard in my life. It really does not help me out, so I don't care.
It's strange.
I miss that man every day.
We all do. We all do.
Yeah, cool for Max, though. I mean, he's doing bits.
And I think overall, if you see how influential he is and like people who don't watch the sport know his name just for
dude, I mean, even his
memes.
Even on his online personality with sim racing, everything with Team Redline, he's a very influential person on the internet as well. So, I mean, he's known everywhere. At this point,
There's been rumors that Kimi Antonelli could replace Logan Sargeant at Imola, and this was first reported by Joe Sayward, FIA-accredited British journalist. This is where we debate, because I know you don't like this idea too much.
Not that I don't like the idea. Well, I don't. but like what pains me with that idea, yeah, I am. But what pains me with that idea is the fact that Logan was essentially, he was told, you're going to get one more year. And I think he's entitled to a full year, a second full year. I don't think anybody should be kicked out of the sport as a rookie. I mean, except Nikita Mazepin. But I think he was entitled to his second year. And I know he's struggling, but arguably Alex Albon has been struggling just as hard this year. I don't think the Williams is as good as it was last year. relative to the rest of the grid. And funny enough, when Logan Sargeant's actually been on it, he has been way closer to Alex than he was last year. I understand why somebody like the Mercedes team wants to get Antonelli in a car, period, just to give him experience so that they have that option to put him in the Mercedes next year. You know, give him three quarters of a season in a Williams, kind of like the George Russell experiment where he spent three seasons with Williams before going to Mercedes. But I think that is extraordinarily harsh on Logan to now know that these rumors exist, on top of the fact that we had the whole chassis gate. I love that people online have been calling that chassis gate, so but good. I mean, it's essentially
it's
what it is.
So it makes sense.
Do I think it'll happen? Potentially, if he has a really, really bad Miami weekend, because a lot of people have been saying, oh, you know, let's give him, you know, his last home race. Like, don't steal his home race for him and then chuck Antonelli in the car after. But, you know, then with that, you also then have to go to the FIA and, you know, prove your case for the exception that Antonelli needs to be granted a super license early. The same thing they were doing with Colton Herta a couple years ago with AlphaTauri. I mean, Colton Herta didn't have enough super license points. Antonelli's not an old enough age yet. I don't think they'll make the same, or I think they will make the same judgment call where they said, no, Colton doesn't have enough super license points. He can't race in F1. Antonelli's not old enough. He can't race in the sport. I think that's fully fair, and the FIA needs to be consistent. So that's where I think if they're going to bring Antonelli in, they have to wait till August because that's when his birthday is. Which gives Logan a little bit of time to improve on his racecraft, on his qualifying pace, and just handling the car better. Because, I mean, yeah, that guy's been crash king for the past year and a half. And I feel bad because, I mean, looking at his junior career is actually incredible. I mean, if you go qualifying in his junior career, he has out-qualified every single teammate he's had over a season in the last, like, four discretions of open wheel racing that he's had. And that's Liam Lawson at Carlin in F2. You had, he out-qualified Oscar Piastri at Prema in Formula 3. I mean, and he took that title challenge to him to the last race when he got taken out. Like if Logan didn't get taken out in the Formula 3 finale, he probably would have won that championship. So he's a very accredited junior driver, and it sucks that he's been taking so long to get accustomed to Formula 1 machinery. But I don't think it's going to happen. I think he'll get at least five more races, like maybe a Nyck de Vries scenario. But I don't want to dwell on that too long because he's got a lot of pressure on him already, and he doesn't need any more than he already has. I mean, I don't know how you feel about it personally, but
that's kind of, I agree with almost everything you said there, yeah. Where it's like, you can't really just give him 1 year to really be like, okay, you're not.
It's like, how are you gonna boot him out five races into his sophomore career? And like that would be incredible.
It overall just doesn't make sense because he's been, like you said, he's been so promising when he was young. That is it something that he just needs time to still kind of get used to? Is he still not fully comfortable behind the cars? Like, there's a lot of those issues, I feel like.
Like, I feel like the biggest issue with Logan is actually the fact that he was promoted to Formula One too early. Like, and that wasn't his fault. I mean, he had one season in F2 mm-hmm. where, yes, he was rookie of the year, but, I mean, he finished fourth in the standings. He still needed time to develop. I mean, he still took two race wins in his rookie campaign. But I feel like if he had a little bit more time to assimilate to Formula 2, like a lot of other drivers have had, that would have done him really well. I mean, think of somebody like Liam Lawson, who had multiple years in F2 and then went to Super Formula after and had a more, I don't want to say streamlined, but robust and lengthened track into Formula 1 to gain as much experience as he could in open wheelers before being chucked into a Formula 1 car. So I think that's where my issue with Logan Sargeant is. It's not him, but it's actually the Williams Driver Academy that I think failed him the most.
Yeah.
I think that's I genuinely think that's a fair statement.
That's where we're going to leave that point off too. Yeah. But I do like how you said that. I think the Williams Academy is the ultimate one to blame here. Not really Logan.
And it's not even that they were, you know, trying to ruin his career. They wanted him in the car super bad because
no team purposely throws a driver's career away.
Yeah, but it's like they wanted to promote the Williams Driver Academy in the sense of, you know, if you're if you're in the Williams Driver Academy, you have a very high chance to be put into a Williams car because you've had issues with like the Alpine Driver Academy where it's been like 6 or 7 years since somebody from that academy has gone into a car.
They need to make some changes at Alpine.
Yeah, like why isn't Jack Doohan in a Formula One car yet?
Couldn't tell you. President of Suzuka, I'm going to butcher this name so hard, but Tsuyoshi Sato. I've also seen it spelled without the I, S-A-I-T-O or yeah, S-A-T-O.
That would just be Sato.
Announced the F1 and Super Formula sharing a race weekend is a possibility. And it's mainly because of scheduling issues overall that Super Formula has to take out March to May to give time to F1 to race there.
Yeah.
And so it makes sense overall to just combine the two into one big weekend. Yeah, it would be a lot more work in the front end, but the payout would be instead of having two major events there, you're just having one ultimate weekend. So,
which I think would be so cool.
It would just be fun.
I also think,
especially with MotoGP coming, you could have like a three-peat weekend.
Yeah. I mean, like with the branch, I've always said that, and a lot of people say this, I'm not the only one who said this, but I think Super Formula is the branch of performance between Formula 2 and Formula 1. Like a Super Formula car is stronger, can output more horsepower XYZ than an F2 car, but obviously it's not as strong as an F1 car. And I think the series and all the tracks that they race at in Japan, it's just a phenomenal spectacle. So to put more eyes on Super Formula through the vice of something like F1 would be really cool. Like, I think it would help both parties out a lot. More people would watch F1 who are more accustomed to just Japanese racing series, whether that be endurance cars or Super Formula or anything like that. And then it would obviously bring a lot more people to Super Formula, which is a very highly competitive series. And that you've had, European pipelined drivers that have been very good in that series. Take Liam Lawson, literally last year, fighting for the championship the entire year. I think it would be super good for both parties.
Yeah, and it's completely up to Formula One. So we will hope to get some news on that in the future. We have some engine suppliers. Because of Honda returning, there is actually going to be 6 engine suppliers, something that only Oliver could use to fathom. So,
take me back to 2-tire supplier days, too. That was so cool. The Bridgestones and the Michelins of the late 2000s, before Pirelli just stole the show.
For those 6 suppliers, we have Audi for Audi and Sauber, whatever you want to call them. I've seen both being thrown around.
Steak F1 team kick Sauber.
I like that one the most. You have Renault for the Alpines, Mercedes for McLaren, Williams, and Mercedes, Ferrari for Ferrari and Haas, Red Bull / Ford for the V-Carb and Red Bull, and you have Honda coming for Aston Martin, which that's, I mean, we still keep talking about it, but like it's such a big deal that I feel like people don't fully fathom.
Well, I also feel like Honda, Aston Martin, and Red Bull have been so intertwined for so long. Like Aston Martin was a title sponsor of Red Bull in, 2018, 2019, 2020, before, obviously then the Aston Martin team got created, and of course they're duly going to lose their title sponsorship from Aston Martin. But to kind of just see that trio just bouncing around a lot is very interesting for me. But I mean, to get Honda back into the sport, they're always so, we want to be in F1. We don't, because we don't think it's, carbon neutral or whatever.
Then we don't have money. And then now we have not money again.
I think it's good to get them back into the sport, though. I know Honda is obviously one of the biggest names in racing, period. So to have them back in the sport fully is good.
Like you said, love it. Can't wait to see them. Some other news that we reported a few weeks ago includes Laguna Seca in the lawsuit the neighborhood was having against the racetrack. But
I was going to say, I think this was like 15 episodes ago, like 10 to 15 episodes
ago. It was over
ago.
The summer, I feel like. Or
not the summer, but it was like over winter break. Christmas. Yeah. We talked about this.
So a settlement has finally been reached and we'll be able to continue operation. Yay! That's what we love to hear. Overall, the settlement includes long-term plans of Friends Friends of Laguna Seca to conduct a previously planned sound impact assessment at the racetrack and carry out appropriate sound mitigation measures, all as a part of being a good neighbor to the surrounding community.
Yeah, the whole community hated Laguna Seca for a while, which I don't know why, because I feel like Laguna Seca is like in the middle of nowhere in California. But the residents surrounding the racetrack were extremely adamant on how bad Laguna Seca was for the surrounding area, which I still really don't understand, because that brings a financial boost to that community.
Yeah, like if you have a major attraction that draws people in, it's going to make you money. But
I mean, we had the same issue with when they were originally constructing the Miami track. So many people in Miami Gardens were boycotting it because they're like, all this construction, all the sound, we need to be compensated for all this happening for, you know, 6 weeks out of the year now. And it feels like that's what the Friends of Laguna Seca are arguing about, but I don't think it's that big of a deal. Now, hey, we get a Chicago GP at some point and I, you know, get all the sound of that for 6 weeks out of the year, maybe I'll change my mind, but that's not happening yet. So
we've had construction here at the studio for like 6 months, and every single morning,
I will say, yeah,
it is so annoying.
It's done now, but hey,
major tools are done now, but they're still doing some stuff. But that's beside the point. Both of us saw this graphic over the week, and we just thought it was funny because
I literally saw it this morning.
Max Verstappen is being said
to have a 94% chance of winning the World Drivers' Championship, with Checo behind at 3%, Charles Leclerc in third with a 2% chance of winning, and Carlos Sainz with a 1% chance of winning the championship. That graphic means absolutely nothing in any context whatsoever. It means literally nothing.
Doesn't
but we just
mean
thought
anything
it was so
with
funny.
Context. Either.
Yeah, context, like, no context. The graphic means nothing. I just thought it was really funny to look at. It should be 100% chance, but
honestly, because we all know Checo ain't winning a race this year.
True.
Some things that I kind of want to go over, especially with some news that kind of came out this week.
Or just F1 title sponsors.
Yeah, just kind of going over the title sponsors, what that kind of is, and how much money these people are paying for.
The title sponsorship of the teams, yeah.
Red Bull obviously has their famed one with Oracle, which if you like the company or not, I'm not going to make my beliefs on it.
Yeah.
But they are being paid, they're paying Red Bull $300 million over 5 years, so about $60 million a year for the title sponsorship.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that just kind of, it's crazy to think about that, like, this is all just one big brand deal. At the end of the day, this is all just a marketing ploy, but
the eyes are going to be on the Red Bull so much. I mean,
yeah, and the cameras are obviously...
Well, funny enough, actually, since the Red Bull is so far ahead, the cameras aren't on it that much.
That's what I was saying.
I feel like actually...
Sponsors got to be mad about that,
I feel like it's funny. Like somebody like McLaren, who has sponsor after sponsor after sponsor...
They don't have a title sponsor as of now.
They don't, but they're a midfield car, so they're... Well, upper midfield car, so they're always battling somebody... So they're always shown on TV. So those sponsors get their times. Red Bull is shown for the first three laps. Or sorry, Oracle is shown for the first three laps and the last two of the race.
Unless Checo's fighting for
Checo
fifth place.
Unless Checo beans it into the wall.
Aston Martin has Aramco, which this one surprised me. But $450 million over 5 years?
Over the same five-year period, bro. That is...
$150 million more. Pardon me.
That's insane.
You have a Mercedes with obviously their famed one, Petronas. This was a little hard one to get a real number about, but the one that I kept seeing around was $75 million a year, which...
And that's been a thing for at least 10 years at this point. I know it was BlackBerry before, the old little government phones.
Dude, I love the BlackBerry phones.
Dude, you ever remember playing like the Brick Breaker games on the Blackberries?
Yeah, dude, I had
dad's BlackBerry when I was a child playing.
Bro, we don't need to go down this rabbit hole.
It is
Texas
a rabbit hole.
Hold'em game on the Blackberries.
Oh my goodness! Bring it back to Mercedes.
Bring the BlackBerry back.
But $75 million a year—that's huge as well. It's not as big as $90 million a year with Aramco and Aston Martin, but that's still a huge sum, and that's going to continue for a long time.
Yeah, that partnership has been.
It's literally been going on for a decade. I don't see it stopping at any point.
No way. McLaren does not have one as of yet, but there's some news.
But they have so many.
There's some news at the end of the episode that I didn't think you saw, so I'm going to hold it off.
Yeah, but I will say, without knowing what that is, I mean, they have Views, they have Cisco, they have OKX, Chrome, they have Google. Like that'll take the title, or not the title sponsor, but the side pod sponsor, depending on where they are, what country they're in, because there's so many different regulations with their sponsors, since some of them are very controversial. But yeah, none to really steal the show.
Audi, Sauber, Steak, Kick. I don't know how much they're paying for that. I imagine it's just kind of like a last minute deal where they just need a sponsor. But
I also feel like it's a lot of money.
Oh, I mean, I don't think Steak is paying. Oh, there's a ambulance.
You know, with how many? Away.
True. So we're gonna. Oh, it's gone now.
Let's go. With how much money Steak makes off of underage gamblers, I'm not surprised if they're paying, let's say, $100 million a year for the 2 years that they're going to get this title sponsor. I really do wonder if Steak and Kick are going to have any sponsorship of that
Kick
car
will.
Post
Kick will
Audi.
Kick will continue having some sort of sponsorship. I'm not sure if it's going to be full title sponsorship though. Williams does not have one. Racing Bulls,
Visa,
obviously, we
app.
Talked about them. Visa, Cash App. It's 15 years, but I could not find a money price down. So
I didn't know that was 15
years.
I did not know that was 15 years.
It's 15 years, so I can only imagine that it has to be closer to, you know, over, like closer to $500 million, I would say.
Yeah.
That's about less than...
I mean, $500 million, that's like... little $40-35 million a year.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
And especially for a team that's not top of the front, like top of the grid, but like someone that's still hopefully going to be competing soon.
Yeah.
You have Haas and MoneyGram with $20 million a year, which
they needed money, period.
Yeah, and I think that's a steal for MoneyGram, honestly. And Alpine, you have the BWT, which I didn't know stood for Best Water Technologies, with $25 million a year. This all matters because, like, this kind of ties into the team points talk with the new point production system. Oh, I don't know what I'm saying, but
yeah.
Overall, it's like those teams with more money obviously are going to have more capacity to build a better car, but that doesn't mean just because they're back of the pack doesn't mean they should compete at all. And, you know, we'll get into that later with overall why battling for P11 matters right now and how it really doesn't. But the little bit of news I wanted to say, which I'm really hoping
I did
is
see
true.
This. I did see this earlier.
After the Miami Grand Prix, McLaren might announce a title sponsor with MasterCard.
And I know multiple teams were fighting over this, actually. Mm-hmm. I don't know what teams, but I know MasterCard
teams.
Has been in contact with multiple teams.
It's all that matters. Multiple teams,
multiple
baby.
Teams. Same with Adrian Newey.
Which is a whole nother talking point we'll get to later. Miami right now is around the corner with 1 week from today. Do you know what time it starts? For
I believe it's
Central Standard?
2 p.m. 2 p.m.
All right.
It's a midday. It's
a midday race for us, which is going to be exciting. Ferrari is going to be implementing a few changes. Obviously, this is a big talking point this week. They are going to be rocking some sort of blue livery. Now, we don't know if that's going to be full blue like they did
back in the 50s, 60s,
50s,
yeah.
And or if it's going to be red with like blue highlights substituting
I
the white.
I really hope it's full blue because the liveries of those cars in the 50s and 60s were honestly some of the most beautiful cars I've ever seen. Like those two shades of blue that they'll be using this week. And I mean, just seeing it from the team kits that they've put out.
Yeah. So the shades of blue, that's where this next one comes in. Mm-hmm. It's obviously this is all being done in honor of Ferrari being sold in America for 70 years, which is also
that's why it's
right,
happening at
which,
Miami.
Yeah, that's why it's also happening here. But in April of 1954, a three-time Le Mans winning race car driver named Luigi Chinetti became the official importer of Ferraris into the United States. So they almost got this down to the exact month, which
it's
I think
really cool.
Is really, really cool. The color blue is not blue. It is Azzurro La Plata. That is the exact name for it.
Thanks for trying to pronounce it, because I would have botched it even worse.
I heard a lot of pronunciations of it, and so I'm trying to do it. But this is also the color of Guido in Cars.
Oh, I'm down with that.
So that
we're about to get some 1.8 second pit stops.
We can pray.
Hey, they're not steaks, so doing something right.
Some of the other shocking news for them is their new title sponsor, which
we didn't
announce them earlier.
We didn't mention the Ferrari.
Because it's a big news point, so I wanted to give it their own point.
I like
point.
It. I'm proud of that.
They are being sponsored now by the American technology company HP, which I think is Hewlett-Packard.
You might have a laptop by them, maybe a desktop computer.
I believe this one is the one that I'm currently recording this on. I could be wrong, but it's pretty shocking. I mean, they're
reportedly saying the same size as the Red Bull Oracle deal, so somewhere around $60 million a year. You know, maybe is this related to Lewis joining the team?
I didn't even think about that, but
no.
It could honestly
But it's also very interesting because Ferrari technically haven't had a title sponsor since Marlboro, or I guess Mission Winnow in 2020.
Which is a subsidiary of Philip Morris International.
Which owns Marlboro. So, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, thanks, dude. I thought I can give a history lesson too.
No, I didn't know that. That's why I was actually like shocked and looked at you. Like
but yeah, no, they went from
that makes
tobacco
sense why
company
they went from
to a technology company, which I think that's a good change. But
two major industries.
That's true.
You know, these shirts that Ferrari is saying, I didn't know they were supposed to come out on
April 29th.
Yeah, I was looking for them all week. And
do not be on your computer at that time because I am trying to cop.
Yeah, please don't crash the servers because Oliver and
that might be some of my favorite F1 merch that has ever come out that I've ever seen.
Oliver and I need to be matching mechanics.
I'm trying to rock up in a Guido blue Ferrari hat. Are you kidding me?
No, I want the shirt, bro.
I want them all. I want it all.
You want the full drip?
I'm dropping a band on this.
Oliver's going to be dripped out for the next podcast.
Just keep
a lookout for it.
See, that's why I wore the blue denim today.
McLaren is also rocking their first round of upgrades at Miami.
And they've already been looking good, so
especially after the showing in China, and I saw a lot of things saying that they were the better car compared to the Ferrari in China.
Absolutely. 100%.
Ferrari had a lot of troubles with tire deg.
I think Lando Norris, if he didn't make his issue in the sprint race, actually had a very good chance to take his first, not Grand Prix victory, but just victory in F1 that weekend. But unfortunately, he choked like he always does. Love you, Lando. But it's coming. It's coming.
And then we have Mercedes with the last big team to be rocking some upgrades. They're bringing a huge upgrade package that seemingly is focusing on the car getting more downforce. After both drivers last week were vocal in the fact that they were running very different setups, but were getting consistent issues over those setups. George also told the media that Mercedes needs to move away from analyzing and of finding a perfect setup and go back to the more standard approach of focusing on aggressive development and run of upgrades.
Which I feel like is a mainstay in the sport. I don't know why we're trying to find the perfect setup every single weekend.
I mean, obviously each car is not going to be perfect for the track that you're racing at. Yeah, that's fine. That's why you race on 24 tracks over the year. But like George is saying here, it's like you don't need to perfect this just for this one race. We need to make something that's good over the season that we can make small changes to.
Consistency
really
wins championships.
Exactly. Look at Red Bull right now.
Yeah, literally. Well, look at Max Verstappen.
He was quoted with saying, "I think there's no silver bullet," and explained that we just need to keep adding performance and focusing on the basics, which is obviously the wind tunnel and in the CFD, which I don't know that really means.
I actually don't know what CFD stands
for. I tried to look it
around. It's some basis of
testing.
Research and development of the car.
Mainly just adding downforce. Sometimes it's as simple as that. And just to be the bearer of bad news, I don't think it's just as simple as that, my guy.
I was going to say, unfortunately, it's good to hear that they're bringing a lot, but they also need a metric ton of upgrades to that car.
Oh, yeah. Let you take this point because this means more to you.
Okay. I'm gonna set the stage for everybody here.
2010.
So I was Raven and I always like to use Thursdays as our big planning day to sit down with our draft that we have, obviously, right here. Write all the points down for the week, refine them, make some sort of outline script for the podcast every week. And we were drafting out the one for this week. And I was like, you know, this, it might be a little tough to stretch this episode out this week. And I was like, I can only hope for some big news to happen this week. It's like, I'm just going to go to bed, you know, think about it. I wake up in the middle of the
4
night.
4 a.m. I get a text from
about,
Oliver.
It was about 4 in the morning. I woke up to use the bathroom, as I do, you know, refill the water bottle, the standard stuff. And I see, you know, notification from F1. I get those every day. I think nothing of it. And then I obviously look at the title and it says Nico Hülkenberg to Sauber in 2025. And this is huge because it's not just 2025. This is supposed to be a 3-year deal to keep him at the German manufacturer until at least the 2027 season. They as an Audi, have made it very clear that they want a German driver driving for a German team, just like Alpine. But my prayers were answered. I said I wanted something big to happen, and I manifested that, and it happened in the middle of the night. So, of course, I started spam texting Raven in the middle of the night, and then went back to bed and waited for his response in the morning.
We have the second spot for Audi still kind of up in the air, and you put some drivers down.
I was going to say, I think
you think it could be.
Not even what I think it could be, but just what Nico Hülkenberg signing for Audi/Sauber actually means for the incumbent drivers and those still looking for a drive amongst the grid. Because now it is almost guaranteed that Guan Yu Zhou or Valtteri Bottas will be out of a seat next year.
And I'm thinking it's Valtteri.
Nope, personally. I think it's Joe.
I think Valtteri retires.
I think it's
soon.
Joe. I think Valtteri retires soon, of course, but I think Valtteri is still performing better than Joe is. Carlos Sainz, I threw down because Audi is still very locked in to getting Carlos in the car as well. I also think a Carlos Nico lineup would be so good. I mean, Nico has been a very consistent midfield driver his entire career. He's never really had a top car or even worked for a manufacturer team. Like, he's never driven for a Mercedes, a Ferrari, anything like that.
Been signed to Sauber twice,
which is crazy. And I've also been seeing some stuff where it's every time Nico Hülkenberg,
every time Lewis signs
with a team, a new team, Nico Hülkenberg signs
with
Sauber.
Yeah, it's so good.
And Lewis makes the best decision of his career.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows? Maybe that, you know, that's affecting that. But
maybe Hülkenberg is getting the best decision of his career this turn around.
I really hope so. I threw down Kevin Magnussen as well, because I feel like Nico Hülkenberg leaving Haas actually reinforces Kevin's position in the team going into a new set of regulations. They're really going to want somebody with experience. They obviously tried two rookies in 2021, and that was one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. Love you, Mick Schumacher. I think going against Nikita Mazepin was the easiest thing of your career, though. So they're going to want to keep Kevin Magnussen on board. Another person it, you know, reinforces is Oliver Bearman. Of course, it's been stated that Oliver Bearman is looking like the front runner to replace Nico at Haas this year. But I even threw Sergio Perez in there too, just because, you know, it's still unsure of if Sergio is going to get a contract extension this year. And every single time somebody signs for a new team, it's less and less spots for Sergio to go to. And I kind of am worried for the man. I don't want him to leave the sport. I just want him to leave Red Bull.
Open up the scene for someone else.
Super huge. I'm so excited to see Nico in an actual works team now. I think he's deserved that for so long. I think he's one of the most underrated drivers on the grid, in my opinion. I mean, behind maybe somebody like Carlos. But I think it's going to be so cool to see him and Carlos as teammates if that does happen. And just to see a German driver driving for a German team. I think that's awesome.
Back-to-back German national anthems.
I'm down.
It's better than the Dutch one, let's be real.
I actually love the Dutch national anthem, and I actually know the melody better than my own country's national anthem at this point.
Adrian Newey is leaving Red Bull this season.
It's all but confirmed now.
It's, I believe he said his last day is June 1st with the team. So,
got a month.
Oh, quick month, and now
The rest of the paddock's kind of scrambling.
Yes. And
because everybody wants Adrian Newey.
All team wants him. There was a picture of him wearing a McLaren hat at dinner. So
yeah, that had me shocked.
A lot of people were like, okay, maybe that means something. And a lot of people are still rumoring that Ferrari and Red, or not Red Bull, but Ferrari and Mercedes have been making offers for the man that he cannot refuse. And I don't think he has accepted one yet. So he could retire here. Let's be real.
And who knows? But hey, we still have the cooking Lawrence Stroll at Aston Martin offering this man hundreds of million dollars to come.
I think he does it.
I don't think he goes to Aston Martin. I think it's Ferrari or nothing.
Interesting.
Are you kidding me? A Fred, Newey, Lewis, and Charles combination.
That does
Ferrari.
Go hard. That does go
that
really
goes
hard.
Harder than any Red Bull combination with Max Verstappen, in my opinion.
I vote for the sympathy joining Williams to make Logan Sargeant the greatest driver on the grid.
Well, he's got 1 week for that.
Oh, got to do it now then. Max and Mercedes could be meeting at Miami after the race during this week to talk about him potentially joining Mercedes. Not saying that he will, but I understand if he wants to go to this and see either how he's being viewed by these other teams and like how much they're thinking he is worth. But
whether
also
he wants
just
to stay
see,
at Red Bull.
Literally,
just see what they're offering.
Just to talk to the other teams too. Because, you know, sometimes they can offer you, like right now, I don't think.
I think just get
his
it.
Name. Max doesn't have like a like
manager?
Endorsement.
Role, oh, endorsement, yes.
For the team, which, you know, obviously Lewis really wanted that with Mercedes and they didn't give it to him. Are they holding on to that to give to Max potentially?
Entice so, Max. I think for Max, the most important thing that he learns from this, and I think this is why he's doing it, is just perspective. I think
literally.
He is literally going to this meeting to get a perspective.
Which can't fault the man. Yeah. I would want to know what I'm worth too at that
point.
Like,
it's not like this isn't some secret meeting or anything. He's going with his whole team. Like this is a public information. So, but don't think anything crazy is happening. Don't think he's going to Mercedes now. But yeah, it's happening. I'm going to be interested to see what we get out of that that meeting from them. Who knows? Maybe we have something shocking.
Absolutely. Staying with the Red Bull kind of management team there, Helmut Marko was mentioning other drivers around the grid with the open spot that they still have at the moment. He was saying to Service TV, saying, quote, Norris has at least a contract until 2026, so he is not an option in the short term, nor is Piastri, but both drivers are certainly interesting for us in the future. And I don't think they're really going to be getting anything unless Sainz gets his best friend Oscar back.
No, Sainz and Lando are BFFs.
That's all.
Carlando.
Carlando, yeah.
Oh, I'm so mad at you now.
I'm sorry.
No, get out of here.
Let that sink in.
No, I'll take the rest of the podcast by myself.
All right,
leave.
Go.
Okay.
Have a discussion with yourself because this whole next point's a
wait,
discussion.
No, actually, I really need you. No, but we were talking about the...
No, the camera battery's low. We're going to take a short break, everyone.
Apologies.
Right, everyone.
We're back.
We're back. Sorry about that. Camera died and we have two cameras. That's why we have two cameras, though, so... Next time we will charge
hopefully
the cameras.
Hopefully I look the same, guys.
Hopefully we look exactly the same and the camera is not too jarringly different. But we are back for another about 10 minutes, I'd say. So you guys got a little bit more content. Before we were rudely interrupted, the overall state of the back of the grid right now is
because
the last talking point.
I think it's important that we talk about this because of what we talked about last week, the whole potential of increasing the points down to P12 in the championship. Because I know a lot of team bosses have come out from the bottom teams.
You have Komatsu.
Komatsu was huge.
Laurent
like,
Mikes is also the other one.
Is the other one. For,
really,
for
vocal about
for
this.
V-Carb. I was going to say Komatsu said that he thinks three teams, five races, and having 0 points is not good for the sport.
Which overall, he has a huge point.
It
I
makes sense.
I wouldn't like if you're wanting.
What's that going to look like to sponsors?
What's it going to look like to sponsors? But also in the eyes of like NASCAR, the back teams can still be a winner. So if you're essentially saying, oh yeah, these bottom teams that you know just quite don't have as much money as the top five.
Or literally, let's say you finish P11 every single race of the season. You're still on 0 points, but you are directly in the middle of the pack.
Yeah.
You could have, it doesn't make any sense because you could have a team finish, you could have a one driver DNF every single race and then finish P10 once. And are you really saying that is more valuable than finishing P11 every single race of the year?
Which
I think that's kind of stupid.
I think it's a very valuable point overall. And,
of course.
You know, you have other people like Brundle, who is very vocal against this point change. And the one quote that, you know, rings in my head is the fact that, like, he said, you know, teams, like, points aren't given. Points shouldn't be given by the sport to the teams. These should be earned by the drivers and the team constructors. And that that made me really mad when I heard that because
I feel like I've heard that all of my life.
Yeah, and like overall, it's like, it's not the same where, you know, most of these teams didn't have as much money. But when you have Red Bull, Ferrari, Mercedes pumping hundreds of millions a year into their car, while you have Williams with a $70 million cap because that's all their budget can afford, it's not fair for Williams in that sense to penalize them or... You know, because they're also in the back of the grid, they're not going to get that higher money split from finishing higher in the Constructors' Cup. Because that's also a huge point.
Because I've heard so much from fans online saying, oh, just build a better car, like blah, blah, blah. It's so hard to build a better car with such a smaller budget than all the other teams. Like, sure, they put in a cost cap into the sport, but some teams still can't even hit the cost cap.
That's why you have...
Like if it was a perfect world,
busting the budget cap on food.
Yeah, but eating is important. But I'm sorry,
food is fuel.
Like, if we were in a perfect world, every single team would hit the cost cap every year. But we're still not at that point.
No, and it's not going to change unless you have a money split difference between the FIA and F1 and the teams, which obviously is not going to happen because they don't want that.
How about we stop giving Ferrari their legacy payment every single year?
Why doesn't Williams get a legacy payment at this point?
Williams actually does get a small payment.
One, a small one, but it's not as huge as that. But like, why do they even get like $5 million for a team?
I think the legacy payment doesn't make any sense at all. I don't think it's a waste.
I mean, I understand just because you want to benefit a team that's been in the sport for a while, but like, there's got to be another way to do that. Give them more wind tunnel time. Give them more...
That's even worse. Giving them more wind tunnel time is even worse.
So I don't know. I'm not a professional in this sense because, you know, neither of us are, but...
We're fans.
I would love to talk to a professional about this and kind of get their opinion on, like, how to fix this issue overall. Like, what are some viable options that the teams can introduce to improve these better cars? Because it's really not fair. And it's not fun to watch.
I know. I just want to see a point where every single team is actually able to hit the cost cap. Because like I really feel like when we're talking about the cost cap, when that was brought in 2021, I thought, you know, it wouldn't help the bottom teams as much, of course, since they're, you know, struggling for funding and all that. But I did think it would make the front of the field fight closer. And somehow we've walked into one of the most dominant periods in the sport. And you know Ferrari, Red Bull, Mercedes, they're all hitting the cost cap.
Mm-hmm.
So why is there still so much variance between them? I mean, Adrian Newey, of course, is a big factor in the variance. I mean, just how they design the cars. But I thought the cost cap would bring the top teams a bit closer together, and it hasn't. So, I mean, studying that, I feel like, is important as well. But when it comes to this... You know, stake of the back of the grid. I mean, the bottom five teams have a combined 12 points.
Yes, and those 12 points are split between two teams, VCARB and Haas. And Alpine, Williams, Sauber don't have a single point. Does that make this fun? Does it make it fair? No. Does it still mean that these teams should be racing? Because in the sense of that they're not getting any points right now and they're not going to be really competing for points, why race? Why not just send five teams out there then?
Yeah, I mean, you have drivers from the top teams say... Let's retire the car. You know, we're three quarters into a race and we get a puncture and now we're a lap down. Let's just retire the car. It's not worth racing. But
for these teams,
it's worth. You have to. It is an actual necessity to keep racing.
It's just a really broken system that needs to be fixed, and I don't really see it being fixed anytime soon. And that really, really just hurts as
a I do think bumping the points down a little bit further would help. Even if, like, it's just two positions.
I was going to say, it's not two positions.
P20 is not getting a point.
And especially if you bring another team in.
Maybe do a MotoGP point system down to P15, especially if we get 24 cars on the grid.
22.
No, I'm saying if we go back to 12 teams.
Oh, 24 yeah. cars. If we go back to 12 teams.
I think the MotoGP point system is phenomenal.
I think it would work really well in that sense where you would have, you know,
points driver down to P15.
Yeah, but still teams like fighting for points.
Of course. And no matter where you are on the grid in that sense, unless you're a like an HRT or a 2021 Haas, you're able to fight for points every week.
Obviously, no race this weekend, but we got Miami next week. So we will have a lot of news on that as this is one of the three races that we can actually watch normally during the year.
We're out 1 month from the next WEC race as well. I don't know exactly when it where it is. I couldn't remember off the top of my head. I mean, obviously, 24 hours of Le Mans is in the middle of June, which I'm super, super excited for. But
I'm so happy that we've stalled and pulling it up.
No, you're good. I'm very happy that we've... Raven and I have really started to get into WEC this season.
Not even WEC, but like rally too, dude. I've been enjoying so much rally content just off air and on my free time.
Yeah. But no, it's at Spa. It's the Spa. 6 hours of Spa.
What's the exact date?
It's May. May 9th through the 11th, yeah.
The race is on May 11th. So we got...
At 1 p.m. Belgium time, which I believe is...
10 days.
6 a.m. for us.
10 days for us. So not a bad time. Overall, no F2. We did have Croatia last week with rally, and
I didn't catch any of this. I know Raven did.
I caught very, very little. I watched some of the highlights, but last week was a lot on the plate for both of us, and that's why we're getting to this point now. You had the Red Bulls, Sebastian Ogier. I pray I got your name right, homie. You take the win overall with Elfyn's Evans in the really close second, only 10 seconds behind after
the entire weekend, which is insane. After all those splits, only being 10 seconds behind it, that actually blows my mind.
It was also the domination by Red Bull and Ford at this cup, so it was really, really entertaining, though.
Yeah.
You have Takamoto taking the Super Sunday 7 points, only by 1.87 seconds over Ohtatonic after the four Sunday stages, which is even more mind-boggling. Four stages,
bro,
under 2 seconds. Okay,
that literally means they're within 0.5 of a second on every single stage.
Yeah, one turn, there's some sort of hiccup.
That's not even a hiccup.
Just
one
took
different
it a little
braking
wide.
Yeah, line.
Literally. And then you have the Belarusian Nikolai Grazin. Winning WR2, so congrats to him. Additional news for Rallycar is that they might be bringing an F1 style team radio to the TV broadcast.
I think that would be really cool, especially because there's somebody else in the car,
the team driver.
With
them. And there's been times where you can hear the co-driver on air, but never so clearly that you can really understand what they're fully saying. Especially you know, since a lot of these guys aren't speaking English, they're speaking in some sort of native language or
team
language that they both agreed upon. But I think overall it's going to be cool. It's going to allow a lot more information to go quicker, especially if something's wrong with the car, if there's a crash around the stage.
I was also going to say
small stuff
like
that too.
That stuff with F1 that I've felt very fortunate to have access to, because I feel like it keeps me way more engaged. And just in the know about what's going on. So I feel like at any discretion of motorsport that does it. I know WEC does it really well too. Like when we were watching 6 hours of Imola, I thought that was really cool. All the information we got with the teams and that kind of stuff. But I think bringing that in is going to be super cool. And just improving the broadcast as they go on is going to be really nice. But
all right, guys. What the final part of the podcast today.
That is not what I was expecting.
This is a picture I found, and I really wanted to show you. It's George Russell in a hat. That's gonna wrap it up for
bro,
us.
I just look at?
I have way more. I have like 9 more of other drivers that I'm gonna just kind of dabble in.
I'm gonna wake up tomorrow morning from like 8 text messages from Raven. They're all images. It's shirtless George Russell's gonna be in there at some point.
You know the joke about the Hat Man?
No.
Like if you take too much Benadryl, you're gonna see the Hat Man.
I've never heard that in my life.
That is my Hat Man. Just George.
Yeah, I'm never
Russell.
Taking Benadryl in my life. I'm good. Never have, never will.
That's
I don't think I have.
Huge cap, bro.
Wait, I literally don't think I have.
You never had the little pink, I think it was pink liquid. It might be amoxicillin that I'm thinking
of. I'm pretty sure that's
I don't know.
Pink liquid.
Crap. It's Benadryl. You're thinking of Pepto.
Pepto-Bismol. Yeah, it's not Pepto. I love that stuff. That's so good.
Dude, Pepto's disgusting. This is a huge tangent that we are breaking down, but we will be back next week.
Sorry, you guys are seeing how Raven and I interact off the podcast.
This is just how this is our daily interaction between the two of us, but that's going to wrap it up for us this week on the gravel. We will be back with Miami next week. You know, 5 more weeks of school for me.
Blue Ferraris.
We're getting there. Thank
you guys
for listening.
Have an absolutely
check
wonderful
us out on,
week.
Yeah, check us out on Spotify.
Apple
check out
Music,
the,
YouTube, you got wherever that. You get your podcasts, you
check
guys.
Check out the Good Morning Hockey every single day this week. Subscribe right here. Check out another video right here.
Right here.
We'll catch you guys next time.
Take care, y'all.
On the gravel.